Well, we're here today to speak to the President of the United Nations Economic and Social Council, His Excellency Nestor Osorio. Have I pronounced your name correctly?
Very well.
A native of Colombia. And the reason we're speaking to you today is that you have very kindly come into Vatican Radio Studios following your private audience with Pope Francis. Mm-hmm. But let's begin with your United Nations role, a very, very important one. Most people probably haven't heard about the UN's Economic and Social Council, but you are responsible for over 70% of the human and financial resources of the entire United Nations. That's quite a responsibility. Can you describe the work and function of the Economic and Social Council?
Thank you very much for having me today in Radio Vatican. The Economic and Social Council is one of the three pillars, institutionally speaking, of the United Nations. The Charter is conceived to address three big areas in the world: peace and security, and that's why the Security Council is one of the important institutions, economic and social development, and then the institutional framework of the ECOSOC, the Economic and Social Council, is there to guide and to formulate all the necessary initiatives and proposals to give to this aspect of economic and social dimension a real direction. And then the third pillar is the humanitarian one: human rights, humanitarian protection, humanitarian assistance. So this is the United Nations, and as you said very rightly, the Economic and Social Council, ECOSOC, is the one that is prepared, and it has to be the one that works in a direction that will prevent war to take place and will help peace and security to be installed. That's why it was negotiated like that in the 45s when the Charter was adopted, is that the main objective of the United Nations being avoiding wars, then you have to create the basis and the solid foundations to prevent that war. And that is what we are doing, and that's why we are tackling the most important issues concerning the three dimensions of the sustainability of the planet and of the sustainability of the human race, which is the economic, the social, and now the environmental. The Millennium Development Goals that were devised in 2000 addressed the most important issues like poverty, reduction, elimination of poverty, like equality of gender, like access to school of children, boys and girls, the reduction of children's mortality, the reductions in abortions. I mean, there are very precise objectives, and we have been the promoters through commissions and committees of the recommendations. The ECOSOC is the one that convened the big summits, Rio Plus 20, and that canalize to the governments the recommendations of policies to be implemented in order to get closer or faster to these objectives. How to reduce poverty? Here are the instruments, these are the tools, these are the ways to act. And ECOSOC is in charge of very important issues that has to do today with everything that relates to food security. This is one of the issues I've been touching here in my audience with the Pope, and also with the directors of FAO and the World Program of Food, and how can we create a situation or approach a situation in which in no more than 20 or 30 years the world population is going to be from 7 to 9 billion people, and the amount of food that is going to be required is going to be double of what it is today. So this is one of the challenges we are facing in our work of ECOSOC and planning the post-2015, which is the year that the Millennium Development Goals are supposed to be evaluated, not to be terminated or concluded, to be evaluated and to make a further step to the post-2015 in a more comprehensive and a more committed way by all the actors, developed and developing countries, with what we could call the sustainable development goals, more permanent, and if possible to say, as much as we acquire some systems of protection of the planet, protection of the human race, attention to the basic needs, to make those irreversible, that we really could make progress, because the challenge is to eradicate poverty. The challenge is to get gender equality. The challenge is to eliminate the inequalities that exist around the world. And so these issues, when I discussed with the Pope, I saw that we were tuned in the message he's conveying to the humanity, and the task that we have as political interpreters in the United Nations, in order to show the way and to create this kind of roadmaps in order to make economic and social life more palatable, and to make the and to save our planet. We are really at risk with the climate change tendencies, and with the different and sometimes irreconcilable differences in some areas. We need to create the conditions to avoid conflicts and to be more close to the approach of peoples. The Pope has very much insisted in how important it is to create conditions for people to get together, to join forces and try to address the basic problems we are facing.
You mentioned there in your answer the fact that the date 2015 is not a deadline for the Millennium Development Goals to be accomplished, but perhaps most people don't realise that.
Yeah, the thing is that 2015 it has been established as, okay, we need to create some kind of indication in order to create commitments. We were in 2000, we have these challenges. By 2015, we will see how far can we go.
And how far are
we? The profile is quite uneven. But I will say that in many developing countries, and I will say more than 60%, it's a very good ratio in the different objectives that has been obtained. But, of course, there are others that are behind. And if you see, there are countries that have been subjected to internal conflicts, that have been in war, that have difficulties. So to accomplish those objectives have been more difficult. So the idea is to make a kind of balance, a review where we are, where the accent should be done in some countries, in some regions, and how can we project for the future, continuing with the support to these goals, but I think going step forward. We had a tremendous commitment to be made about carbon emissions, about the use of water, about rationalizing the non-renewable resources. I just come from Istanbul for the big forum on forests, which is at the origin of sustainability and environmental protection, and of course the effort that has been made in renewing forests and not doing waste or bad use of forests, replanting and renewing is enormous, and it's been a tremendous progress because there were commitments, because there were targets, because there were indications where to go, and there were early warnings of what could happen if we don't do these kind of things. So I think that the challenge we have, and we are preparing that post 2015. In May we will receive a report from a high level panel that has been convened by the Secretary General to give some indications. Some co-facilitators have been appointed. We, the President of the General Assembly and the President of the ECOSOC with the Secretary General, we also are working together, coordinating and creating the necessary basis for a coherent approach. So I think we are going to have two very exciting years preparing and devising the next step.
To let us all know exactly how far along the road we are, but a very important step in that road is fair trade. If we want to eliminate poverty, the famous Why Poverty campaign, we also have to look at the issue of trade. I know this is an area that you are an expert in from your past experience. What about the issue of a fair global trade for developing countries so they can be on a par with other countries at an international level?
Yes, trade is quite a substantive and important engine of development, of employment generation, and of creation of wealth. We talk a lot about poverty reduction, but one of the ways to eliminate poverty is creating wealth, is creating opportunities to develop economic activities. And trade is one of the areas in which we can obtain this kind of promotion. The concept of fair trade is a very fair one, in the sense that we, and I've been involved in many initiatives because I used to deal a lot with coffee policies. I was the executive director of the International Coffee Organization and worked together with other international organizations of commodities in order to get this message about the importance of giving to producers of agricultural products a remunerative price. That is the basic concept. What is a remunerative price? It's something that could be a bit subjective, but I will approach the matter saying that if you pay your cost of production, you have a rational profit that allows you to educate your family, to have access to basic amenities, then you are in the area of fair trade. And there are important organizations that are taking this responsibility of saying, we are ready to promote that you pay a little bit more in order to transfer that extra payment to the producer. And that is a good initiative in the sense that that has created kind of awareness. But if you measure what is the percentage of fair, what you could call fair trade, with that title, is a minimal part of the trade. But there is a big tranche of trade that, without being called fair trade, could be reputed or could be called as a fair trade. What we need also is, especially in this area of agriculture, some kind of change that we have been, especially from developing countries, asking for many, many years. And this is to level the playing field in terms of subsidies. One of the big disadvantages, and this goes directly with the prospectus about food security, is that we need better production, more productivity, better practices, more technical assistance, more extension. But for many developing countries, to produce an agricultural product is not the right thing to do, in the sense that it has to compete with producers in developed countries that are receiving important subsidies from the governments. So when you go to the market, you are out of the market. So that creates a disincentive to produce the good. So this is at the heart of the negotiations at the WTO in terms of the agricultural agreement and the agricultural future. Politically speaking, for developed countries like in Europe, in Italy, in France, in Spain, to eliminate subsidies to agricultural sector will mean an immediate political crisis. But at the same time, we are seeing today that the fiscal resources are more and more scarce. The difficulties to satisfy the payment of those subsidies is diminishing, and this is going to create a tremendous political and social instability in these countries. So And at the end, the European Community, for instance, and or the United States, will not have any other alternative but to reduce the subsidies. And this is something that has to be understood as a matter of creating this condition of trade that are more fair, more participative, and more transparent.
Isn't that the key role of your office in reality? Because you gather over 50 member states from developing and developed countries. How difficult is it in promoting this form of dialogue and concession almost between these very different realities.
It is indeed, but the decisions about this matter are not taken at the Economic and Social Council, ECOSOC. They are taken at the WTO. So we have the forum to discuss, to put forward what the consequences, for instance, in food supply and food security are from trade conditions, and for the negotiators in Geneva, negotiations and rounds that have been elusive, try to promote a more equal, a treatment that could be open to be more competitive. So that is the important thing at the United Nations in ECOSOC, is that we can show what the needs and the conditions and the rationale to promote free trade or to promote a trade that could lead to a more fair conditions to all.
What do you see in the church insofar as a partner to try and further these goals? We know that your aim in ECOSOC is to promote a fairer economic standard and social standard for all. So how important is the church as a partner in this campaign of yours?
No, I think that when you find, I will say, affinities, when you see that the messages are taken on board what is identified as urgent and basic needs, then you can combine the messages, the agendas, and you can work together. The Holy See is an observer in the United Nations, but with the capacity of speaking, voicing their aspirations. And I think that in terms of food security, poverty reduction, young labor promotion, equal gender approaches, we are going with messages that are directed to the same objectives. So that's why I offer to the Pope the platform of ECOSOC as a way in which we can be promoters of this message at the same time that we are working for them, and of course we can identify those areas in which we can really do a job that is complementary. So that is a very, very interesting approach, and I think we have the quest is very similar.
You, of course, are only in the role as president of ECOSOC for 1 year. It's a 1-year term, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Very short time to really put your own print or imprint on the actual office. But what would you see as the biggest challenge facing ECOSOC at the moment?
We are at a very special moment in the history of this institution. Is that because of the famous 2015 and post-2015? The momentum is there to renew the ECOSOC, to make it more relevant, to make it more participative, to convey the messages in a more robust and substantive way. In a week time, I will meet in New York. I will have our annual meeting with the Bretton Woods institutions, World Bank, IMF. The WTO will come, the UNCTAD as well. And we will evaluate what is the financial situation in the world, what is the situation of the financing of the development, what are the challenges, what are the problems, what are the obstacles. I will have more than 15 ministers of economy and finance coming to this meeting. So I think that we have the, as president, I have the challenge to put the ECOSOC on the spot, to really say, here we are the platform, we need to shape it in a way that we become substantive partners and substantive interlocutors for the different issues. This year, for instance, our theme in the high-level segment in Geneva in July will be science, technology, and innovation. And you see that when you go deep into this issue, then you will see that this has to do, innovation has to do with what to do best in order to promote a better use of the land, a better guarantee for the food security, a better way to deal with the necessities of medicines for faraway places, how to pack them best. There are a universe in which the approach to science and technology is fundamental to shape the future and create the new jobs that are necessary. And what are we going to recommend? What are we going to say? Say to the governments, and I have already had some ministerial regional meetings to which I have assisted, is the need for governments to commit themselves. And to commit themselves means not only to say it politically, but to do the necessary allocations in the budgets. In Colombia, my country, the government has presented and has obtained the passing of a law in which a percentage of the royalties from exports of oils and minerals go to the Institute of Science and Technology. So the budget for the future is ensured, and then the programs are to be devised in a way that are in tune with the needs of the future of the country. And this is more or less an example. I use my country because I love it. So in order to say that we need to move in that direction, and I think to make the ECOSOC a relevant body and to transmit the necessary energy to work for the issues that are in hand is a very important one.
My final question, although it is, thank God, not affecting South America as much as it is affecting the North and Europe, how big an impact is the current financial crisis having on the United Nations' ability to be able to promote these plans, projects, reforms?
Yeah, I think the impact is more or less important according on how well prepared from the institutional and macroeconomical point of view of the different countries. I think that the Latin American countries in general are already beyond that very, very difficult time of 10 or 12 years ago in which the weakness of the economies created tremendous crises. We managed to surmount those crises, and I think that now we are well equipped to as emerging countries to really make progress. We are capturing a lot of foreign investment that is coming to our countries. We are innovating. We are producing new opportunities in terms. And now is the time at which South-South cooperation could become a real thing, not just a political speech as it has been so far. But it is clear that, as I said before, in terms of financing the development, the resources that used to be used to finance development are going to be diminished. The capacity of transfer of technology is going to be more scarce, because in developed countries, the crisis is creating, and we are in a way to another recession in many of the countries in the United States as well, a tremendous pressure within from the population to say, you have to pay attention to us. And every government is going to be accountable if it's transferring funds to other countries, no matter how important or how laudable is the initiative. There is going to be a lot of pressure in order to do the job in-house and not abroad. So we could, with this global system we have today, whatever happens in any part of the world could affect the rest of the world. So
finally,
we have to
beyond,
be prepared.
Beyond your capacity as a president of the United Nations Economic and Social Council, but much more as a Colombian, as a man from South America, how does it feel to have a South American pope?
Well, we are thrilled, and I was very moved to from the beginning when he was elected, and much more today that I have the opportunity to speak to him in our same language, even using colloquial terms that we use in Latin America in our Spanish. And his approach was so open, so effective that it was thrilling, a very moving opportunity. So we are very proud and I'm very happy. We are blessed to have a Latin American Pope.
Thank you very much for coming in to speak to us today.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.